In the interview I mentioned yesterday, Dr. Keltner, the neuroscientist, he describes a moment or a time in his own life when he found himself needing to go and deliberately seek out awe and wonder. It was following the death of his brother from colon cancer. He says, awe tells us go out and expand your view of things. I do think that awe gives us meaning. The young people I teach are very good at algorithms and computations, and they need the broader view. Well, we could say that about our own lives, too. We get so caught up in our lists, in our goals, in our tasks. You know, just caring for the body, it takes a lot of work. So, go out and expand your view of things. Well, that doesn't necessarily mean climbing to the top of a mountain. It might simply mean spending an afternoon sitting by the ocean or going for a silent walk in the woods. So this broader view, that's what it gave Dr. Keltner during this hard time in his life. He says, you know, what I really care about, I have this new sense of the human form and spirit that maybe my brother is always with me in ways I can't imagine. And going in search of awe gave me that. So, I'd just love to hear how you are this quiet morning we're having together. Seems very special. And I have to be honest with you, I'm very impressed by the people on Zoom, that they're still there, because for some reason I just can't do the Zoom retreats. I get drawn into some project at home, and I'm kind of tricking myself into thinking I'm doing a retreat, but I'm not. So kudos to you in Zoom land. It's not easy. It's not easy to step out of that stream of activity. We condition ourselves over the years to, you know, get up in the morning and what have I got to do today? So, thank you also, everyone here, for staying with it. Kate. Oh, wait for the microphone.
I'm a bit confused because usually when I do walking meditation, I'm focusing on my body. But when I'm going in search of awe, I feel like I don't want to be searching in my body. I want to be looking at trees and grass and flowers. So what should we be doing?
Well, great question. And even I was thinking about how when I invited you to let the natural world be your teachers, I was actually inviting you to take in through perception the trees, the bark, the grass, the leaves, and so on. However, there's a way, I think, to be in stillness, in motion, and then stop. So those moments of pausing when we're about to turn or come to the end of our walking path, so to be in the body is also to be attentive to changing sensations. That's walking meditation. Walking meditation is letting the physical movement be a guide to moment-by-moment awareness. Awe, maybe awe is like the landscape we're walking through. Awe is the orientation of the heart. Awe might be the invitation to abandon the kind of mechanical or instrumental view of the body or movement, but to be open to discovery, open to seeing things in a new and fresh way, which I think mindfulness offers us without even needing to use the word awe. Mindfulness, continuity of mindfulness, it actually, it refreshes our sense perception. I'm sure you've all experienced that, how the sound of a bird can suddenly seem so clear and distinct and sweet. So awe may be, that's a wonderful question, maybe it is the landscape we are walking through, and it is the orientation of the heart towards a fresh way of seeing. But I wouldn't get too caught up with it. I mean, Dr. Keltner, he's a neuroscientist, and he describes being kicked out of his first meditation class. And the reason is that he objected to the instructions, which were to visualize himself as purple fire. And he said, I'm not a being of purple fire. How can I, you know, he was like, excuse me, I'm not a being of purple fire. So they tossed him out. I'm not asking you to visualize yourselves as beings of purple fire. The instruction, you know, our meditation instruction, I think naturally yields a greater sensitivity to the beauty in the world. His kind of direction is to go out and seek the beauty. Go, he says, you know, take yourself for an awe walk. You know, our instruction really as practitioners of this path is to have an orientation of interest and curiosity to all that's unfolding, to the sorrow, to the grief, to the shifting inner landscape as we open to beauty. Beauty can be a tremendous solace, as we know. But it can't fix things, you know. And we're really counseled against looking for ultimate solutions. We're on a path of learning how to be with the changing, unstable, conditioned nature of life. It's a mystery. So we're actually inviting ourselves into this path of not knowing, not being able to pin it down. It's subtle. I mean, it's subtle. It's sort of like foreground, background. You know, those M.C. Escher drawings. What's in the foreground? Oh, in the foreground is mindfulness of the body in motion. Oh, now in the foreground is the color of the moss, and this deep appreciation of the moss. Does that help? I mean, if anyone else has a comment or a reflection, so here. Thank you, Richard.
That's a question that I thought about myself a lot yesterday, because it was my first time doing a walking meditation. So I was struggling with being inside my body, being outside my body, and what should I be focusing on? And something that I've found a lot of, I don't know that I'd use the word awe, but it's probably on that spectrum. This morning is probably the transition from internal to external. Especially the slower I walk, the more I'm noticing my body's balance as I'm walking on the uneven forest path, as opposed to a flat ground like we're on in the room here, that we may be used to in our normal lives. And so I'm searching in my mind for that moment when my body is telling itself to orient itself to the forest path, or the uneven ground that I'm walking on, but I can't find it. Which suggests that it's as autonomous to our body as, you know, breathing is. And so I'm kind of in awe of my body's adaptation to the area around it and the nature. Yeah.
It's a beautiful example of kind of the miracle of the inner ear and proprioception and just our ability to negotiate the world. It is a very lovely place to observe. And you could observe your own inner state and your awareness as you enter a different space, a space that's empty, a space that has people in it, a space that is, you know, full of interesting art, a space that is full of clutter, like your home, my home. but just to notice that, those transitions. I remember one of the questions often asked at long retreats was, how do I eat enough to sustain me and not so much that I feel overfull? And how do I balance the kind of, oh, there's something I want on the table, with just this food is nourishment, food is energy. And again, Michelle McDonald's instruction was, when you hear the sound of the bell for the noontime meal, and you could translate that into when the timer goes off on the soup or the rice or whatever you're cooking, when you hear the sound of the bell, be present where you are and take in your surroundings. And as you approach down the hallway, down the corridor, down the steps, again, be present where you are. Take in the light, take in the temperature. And I found this practice extremely helpful. And then, of course, then there's the ceremony of nourishment, of serving oneself or others a meal. I was a cook at the retreat center, and there was a lot of theater involved. You know, bringing in the big pots and taking off the lid and the steam billowing out. All the yogis bowing. Loved it. It was very satisfying. And I think, you know, the transitions in life can be like these moments of renewing our attention, renewing our sense of discovery. You know, and Thich Nhat Hanh, you know, the meal is now being served. And the plate, you know, I have served myself. The plate is full. May I live skillfully in this realm. And then the food has been consumed, the plate is empty. You know, may I be attentive to feelings of satiation and hunger. So this constant invitation to be aware in creative and different ways. Thank you so much for your comments. Anybody on Zoom have a reflection?
Not yet, but maybe now that you asked.
Mm-hmm. Louise?
I find that when I'm in a retreat, I get almost, maybe you call it retreat sensory perception. So when I'm walking, you know, the first time I start walking yesterday, it's like I'm walking normally. And then each time I'm walking back and forth, it's like my senses become more refined and clearer. And so like this last walking period, it's just, you know, just really feeling the perfection of nature, the perfection of the pine cones, you know, four of them arranged, and it's just, it's like everywhere is a collage of perfection, and it's just like it just makes me feel giddy inside. And and when I was just walking this last period, and just really feeling this complete perfection, if you know, surrounded by perfection, and then realizing I'm also a part of nature. And I look around and there's no flaws. This is all nature. And it was a kind of profound realization, you know. And then I looked at a tree and thought, you know, the sap's running down and it's glistening, and you know, there's no flaw. And yeah, just sort of reflecting on the judgments that we might have, and you know, the judgments that we're fed about how people should be and should look or should act, or it was mostly I wanted to just say about that expanded perception that I find comes with the retreats.
Can I ask you a question? So when returning to daily life, how does that expanded perception influence your routines or your interactions?
That's such a good question, because when I went home yesterday, I thought, I'm going to just go in my garden and just be in my garden, not think springtime, got to trim that and, you know, rake that. And it's very interesting. It's we have such strong habits. And it was very hard not to bend down and move the the leaves off of a rock, or you know, just to be able to just observe, like, oh, beautiful. You know, it was it was exactly that of noticing the habit of mind when I'm back in my own home environment, and just trying not to act on it and just to notice it.
Thank you so much. We have a couple more minutes for any conversation or thoughts. Great.
Thank you. I am so grateful that today there's no wind. Yesterday, I don't know, I've been hiking for so long and leading hikes for so long that you never go into a forest when there's a strong wind. So part of me is trying to beat that down in me because I want to appreciate what's going on, but there's other things going on in my head. I don't know how to reconcile those two things. After all this time, I don't know how to do that. But all I can say is today is beautiful.
Well, you know, now that I think of it, maybe it was not that smart for us to go wandering in the woods yesterday. Did you think of saying anything to the manager?
Well, there's a brochure, and it's all over the brochure, and there's another brochure upstairs, and it's all over that brochure, too. But then I'm going like, the universe will do this.
I didn't look at the brochure. Yes, yes, well, maybe we ought to talk about this. It's true, you know, that falling branches can cause serious injury. Yeah. And even walking in this green space, you still have trees around, although maybe it would be safer, who knows. But thank you for raising that. I think that our conditioning sometimes can be quite useful, you know. Look both ways when you cross the road. So on. Thank you for that. Yeah, so you have. Great.
Well, first I want to say thank you for this retreat. And I feel great today because the night before I only got 5.5 hours of sleep, and last night I got 8.5 hours of sleep, and 1.5 hours of deep sleep, and I just feel great. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that. And as I think about my practice today, and how I've practiced meditation for many years, but this is my first meditation retreat, I find myself practicing and sensing and coming back and focusing on the breath, and trying to have compassion and a beginner's mindset for my mind. But then I also have frustration and disappointment that my mind is not yet completely still. And even though the coldness of the ground and the beautiful sounds are there, somehow my mind still wanders, even though I have all this great awareness that's coming to me. And so I'm trying to find that balance in my practice and appreciation for the craft I'm developing, that one day maybe, you know, I'll be able to extend to the point where I'm not so distracted by the silly, frivolous, fun things that enter our minds. Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much for that, because I think you speak for a number of us here. Anyone have any thoughts today? You know, it is the mind is has no shame. You know, it really, I mean, yeah, Ruth Denison said, self-knowledge is not good news. Do you remember that? So, I mean, it's called seeing the waterfall. It's seeing the flood of thought, the plans, the projects, frivolous, you know, silly, enticing, interesting. I mean, I don't know how many programs I was designing, you know, yesterday or today. It's like, It's so interesting. I think we're naturally creative beings. And so in a period of stillness, the mind presents possibilities and invites us to get involved in all kinds of streams of thought regarding those potential activities. But the key piece, I think, what is your name?
Kieran.
Kieran. And your name is?
Diane.
Diane. So, Kieran, the key piece that you mentioned was noticing frustration. So, you know, frustration feels like what? So stillness is not the goal. You know, we were speaking about goals yesterday. We definitely want stillness because it feels restful. And we're often given the impression that that's the goal of meditation, is to still the mind, quiet the fabrications. Even my instructions give that impression, you know. The settling, I speak about the settling of the mind. But in terms of the four great efforts, to know the mind is key, to know what is present in the mind. So to abandon what is unskillful, to not even make space for what is unskillful to arise, and to cultivate what is wholesome, and to bring to fullness what has already come into the mind that is wholesome. So this recognizing frustration, and there may be even an internal sound or gesture with which we express that, just can't go quiet, you know, I want to be quiet. So there's noticing, and then there's recognizing, just wanting. It's just another form of wanting. And bringing this compassion and interest, that's what it feels like. It feels like a kind of gripping, holding on, and then there's softening and coming back. So it's a training, it's a practice, because we really, we are goal-oriented. And, you know, the mind has moments of stillness, and we need to notice those as well. So the seven factors of awakening, they present themselves as, you know, tranquility, concentration, a moment of joy, that effervescence, that piti that arises. So noticing those and strengthening those by allowing them to be present but also have their own unfolding. So nothing to be clung to. That ought to be our mantra. Nothing in this world. Because as soon as we reach out and say, oh, the mind is still, I did it, I'm here, then already we've identified and we've become somehow this person who achieves stillness at 11:06 in the morning, and the conditions were such that everything was right, the wind had stopped, the sun was shining. Okay, how can I replicate that? So it's like this, you know, the stream entry is such a beautiful metaphor. The first stage of awakening is this understanding of the flow of experience. So how can we accompany ourselves through the changing, dynamic, impermanent, fleeting, ungraspable, vulnerable, unfolding mystery? So whatever images speak to you, recognizing, and this, you know, frustration is so common because we set ourselves up to expect something. But to actually acknowledge the energy and the effort that has kept you to day two, halfway through the day. You know, that's worth bowing to, because wherever we are on our journey of practice, there will always be a sense of not having, you know, quite got where we want to be. And yet, here we are. Here we are. And it's wonderful, like this wonderful community that comes together and then dissolves. You know, it's like bowing to ourselves, bowing to each other for that commitment. So thank you, Kieran.